It was just after dark when Pearlie and Cal rode into Flora Vista, New Mexico territory. From the small adobe houses on the outskirts of town, dim lights flickered through shuttered windows. The kitchens of the houses emitted enticing smells of suppers being cooked, from the familiar aromas of fried chicken to the more exotic and spicy bouquets of Mexican fare. The main part of Flora Vista was a contrast of dark and light. Commercial buildings such as stores and offices were closed and dark, but the saloons and cantinas were brightly lit, and they splashed pools of light out onto the wood-planked sidewalks and into the street. As Pearlie and Cal rode down the street, they passed in and out of those pools of light, so that to anyone watching, they would be seen, then unseen, and seen again. Pearlie and Cal dismounted in front of the Oasis Saloon, tied their horses to the hitching rail, then went inside. They stood for a moment just inside the door. Cal happened to see a pickpocket relieve someone of his wallet. The thief's victim was a middle-aged man who was leaning over the bar, drinking a beer and enjoying his conversation. While he was thus engaged, the nimble-fingered pickpocket deftly slipped the victim's billfold from his back pocket. Instead of putting the billfold in his pocket, though, the thief walked down to the end of the bar and casually dropped it into a potted plant. Then, the thief ordered a beer and stood there, drinking it casually.
Party, did you see that?
Yeah, I saw it.
Maybe we should...
Wait, let's see what happens.
The victim ordered a second beer, and then he reached for his pocket to get the money to pay. That's when he realized that his billfold was gone. Puzzled by the absence of it, the man looked on the floor to see if he'd dropped it. Then he picked up his hat, which was lying on the bar, to see if it was there.
Hey, has anyone seen my billfold?
I know where it is.
Cal and Pearlie were still standing in the middle of the floor, having just come in.
You know where my wallet is?
Yes, sir, I know where it is.
Well, where is it?
Cal pointed to the potted plant that sat on the floor at the end of the bar.
It's down under that plant.
How in the hell would it wind up down there? I haven't moved from this spot since I got here.
Pickpocket, suddenly sensing danger, put his beer down and started walking toward the door. As he did, Pearlie stepped in front of him to stop him.
Here, get out of my way. What are you doing?
Your billfold is in that pop because this fella put it there. Only he didn't put it there until after he took all the money from it and stuck it down in his pocket.
What? Mister, you crazy? I just came in here to have a beer.
And steal some money.
I ain't gonna stand around here and be accused of stealing. What kind of place are you running here anyway? Do you just let anyone accuse an innocent person of picking someone's pocket?
The barkeep brought a double-barreled shotgun up from under the bar. And though he didn't point it at anyone, its very presence lent some authority to his next comment.
Mr. Thornton, you want to step down there and look in the potted plant and see if your wallet is there?
The men who were standing at the bar between Thornton and that potted plant stepped back to let him by. He walked to it, then looked down inside.
I'll be damned. He's right. My wallet is here.
Thornton reached down into the pot, then came up with the wallet, holding it high for everyone in the saloon to see.
I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't put that there.
Is your money gone, Mr. Thornton?
Yes, every dollar of it is gone.
Pearlie stuck his hand down into the pickpocket's vest pocket and took out some folded bills. He handed the bills to the bartender.
Hey, that's my money. You all seen it. He just stole my money.
How much money did you have in your billfold?
I had $19, 3 5s and 4 1s.
3 5s? 4 1.
Pickpocket tried to run, but two men grabbed him. Then they hustled him out of the saloon, bound for the sheriff's office.
Well, now, I'd like to thank you two boys. My name is Thornton, Michael Thornton.
I'm Pearlie. This here's Cal.
Pearlie and Cal, eh? Well, I reckon that's good enough for me. Can I buy you boys a drink?
Later, perhaps, after we've had our supper.
Pearlie looked at the bartender.
That is, if a fella can get anything to eat in here. You serve food?
Steak and potatoes, ham and eggs, your choice.
Yes.
Yes, which?
Yes, we'll have steak and potatoes, ham and eggs.
These young men are hungry. Bring them whatever they want, I'll pay for it.
Oh, you don't need to buy our supper. We were just doing what we figured was right.
I know I don't need to. It's just my way of thanking you.
Oh, if you really want to thank us, you can tell us where we might find a job in this town.
Well, you two boys are looking for a job.
Yes, sir.
You aren't afraid of hard work, are you?
Not if it's honest.
Good enough. I own the livery. I can always use a couple of good men if you're interested.
We're interested.
Then the job is yours.
Ebenezer Dooley turned in his saddle and looked at the five men who were with him. Buford Yancey, Fargo Masters, and Ford DeLorean were men he had worked with before. He'd never worked with Logan, but he vaguely remembered him from their time together in prison. Kurt Logan had brought along his brother Trace as the fifth man. Kurt and Trace Logan were wearing identical red and black plaid shirts.
Logan, would you tell me why in the hell you and your brother are wearing those shirts? Don't you know they stand out like a sore thumb? Everyone in town's going to see them and remember them.
There's likely to be some shooting, ain't there?
I told you there might be. Robbing a bank ain't like stealing nickels off a dead man's eyes.
Well, I already lost me one brother when he got himself killed by Smoke Jensen, and I don't plan to lose me another. That's why Trace and me's wearing these here plaid shirts.
What's wearing a shirt like that got to do with it?
Things get real confusing when there's a lot of shooting going on, and I don't plan for me and my brother to shoot each other by mistake. As long as we're wearing these here shirts, that ain't likely to happen.
If you lead the posse to us because of them shirts, I'll be doing the shooting my own self.
Dooley, the sun's getting on up. I figure it's 9 o'clock for sure. The bank will be open by now.
Right. Fargo, you, Ford, and Yancey will ride into town from the south end. Me and the Logans will come in from the north. That way we won't be drawing no attention on account of so many riding together.
All right. Come on, boys. We need to get around to the other side.
Trace Logan stayed out front holding the horses while his brother Kurt and Dooley went into the bank. There were only two people inside the bank, Rob Clark, the owner, and Tucker Patterson, the teller. Both men were just behind the teller's cage. Patterson looked up as the two men came inside.
Yes, sir, can I help you?
He paused when he saw that both men were wearing hoods over their faces. They were also holding guns.
This here's a holdup. Fill this bag with money.
Mr. Clark, what shall I do?
Yeah, tell him, Mr. Clark, what should he do?
Tucker, I think you better do what the man says.
Yes, sir.
Now you're getting smart.
Patterson started taking money from the cash drawer and put it into a sack.
Kurt, take a look out in the street. Anybody coming in?
Don't see nobody.
That's all the money we've got.
Patterson handed the sack back. Dooley looked down into it.
There's not more than a couple $100 here. I know you got more than that. I want the money from the safe.
I don't have the combination to the safe. Only the bank president has the combination.
Where is the bank president?
Patterson glanced toward Clark, but he said nothing.
Oh, I see. All right, Mr. Bank President. I'll ask you to open the safe.
Clark didn't move. Dooley pointed his gun at Patterson.
Open the safe, or I'll kill him right now.
Mr. Clark, please!
Nodding reluctantly, Clark walked over to the safe. Within a few minutes, he had the door open. Dooley could see several small, filled bank bags inside.
Damn! Have you ever seen so much money?
Put them bank bags in the sack!
What's taking him so long?
Yancey looked back toward the bank. Him, Fargo, and Ford were out front of the leather goods store in the middle of town.
Well, maybe there's lots of money and it's taking them a while to get it all. You don't worry about them. You just do the job you're supposed to be doing. Keep a lookout all around you.
There ain't nobody paying no attention to the bank.
Fargo? Yancey? There's somebody coming.
Ford was holding the horses.
Where? Who?
Up there. He's coming right for us.
He's carrying a pair of boots. Maybe he bought some boots here and he's bringing them back.
Well, this is a hell of a time for him to be doing that.
At that moment, Dooley and Kurt Logan ran from the bank. Clark appeared in the front door of the bank right behind him. He was carrying a pistol.
Hold up! Bank robbery! These men just robbed the bank!
Dooley, both of the Logan brothers shot back at the bank, and Clark dropped his gun, then fell back into the bank.
Shoot up the tail, boys! Keep everyone's head down!
After the outlaws made their escape, Marshal Turnbull went to the bank. He found Rob Clark dead in a pool of blood.
Anyone get a good look at the ones who did this?
Two of them were wearing red and black plaid shirts.
Did you see their faces?
No, I didn't see their faces. They had their faces covered with hoods. Are you going after them, Marshal?
There are six of them.
I don't care how many of them there is. They got our money. Hell, after this winter we just come through, that's near about all the money the town has left.
I'll need a posse.
I'll ride with you.
Several other townspeople volunteered as well.
All right, men. Get yourself a gun, have your women put together too, maybe 3 days of food. Get mounted and meet me in front of my office.
When?
I figure you should all be ready within an hour.
An hour? Marshal, them outlaws can get a long ways in an hour.
Like Turnbull, the man who had spoken was wearing a badge, because this was Turnbull's deputy.
Pike, they've already got 15 minutes on us. If we go off half-cocked now, we ain't got a snowball's chance in hell of catching up to them. Best thing for us to do is be prepared. Now, are you planning on riding with the posse or not?
You know I'm going. I'm your deputy, ain't I?
Then you get you some food. Get back on down to the office and wait until we're ready to go.
All right, all right. I just don't want them sons of bitches to get away, that's all.
Turnbull looked at the others, who seemed to be standing around awaiting further instructions.
Well, what are y'all waiting for? Now!
With that, the posse scattered.
Marshal, you want I should get some cuffs so we can cuff them when we find them?
Of course. Unless you were planning on asking them not to try and get away.
No, it's not that. It's just I thought that, well...
You thought what?
I wasn't all sure we'd be bringing them back in, if you know what I mean.
No, I don't know what you mean.
I mean men like that, shooting down Mr. Clark and stealing the town's money like they done? Well, some folks might think they don't have no right to be brought back in alive.
Pike, I'm gonna pretend I didn't hear that.
It's not like I'm talking lynching or anything. I meant, what if they put up a fight? We have to kill them. I mean, all legal-like.
Now, you get back down to the office and get ready, like I said.
Sure, Marshal, sure. Like I said, I didn't really mean nothing by it. I was just thinking on what might happen is all.
Do me a favor, will you, Pike? Don't think.
Smoke was riding north through a level forest. Just behind him, a boulder-covered hillside rose almost 10,000 feet to the wooded and still snow-covered peak of Thunder Butte. It was getting toward midday when Stormy started limping, and Smoke had to stop. He had just lifted the foreleg of his horse to look at the hoof when he saw six men riding toward him. Now, Smoke didn't pay that much attention to him at first. He was on relatively level ground, which meant that anyone who was traveling through here would have to come in his general direction. Right now, his biggest concern at the moment was the shoe. But the approaching horses made an obvious turn so that they began moving directly toward him. Smoke had no idea what they wanted, so he kept an eye on him as he examined Stormy's hoof. He saw that the horse had picked up a rock between the shoe and the hoof, so he started working to get it out. The riders came right up to him, then reined to an abrupt halt. Smoke looked up at him again.
Howdy.
Howdy.
The speaker was a man with a long, pockmarked face and a drooping eyelid. There was something peculiar about these riders, the way they all dismounted and the way they stared at him. It was also curious how they let one man do all the talking. Two of the riders were wearing identical red and black plaid shirts, and as he looked at them more closely, he saw that they looked enough alike that they must be brothers. He did not have a good feeling at all about the whole situation, and he decided that the quicker they left, the better it would be.
Are you having any trouble?
Nothing I can't handle. You folks headed anywhere in particular?
Yeah, we're looking for work.
Don't know as you'll have too much luck there. The winter was pretty bad on most of the ranches. What few spring roundups there were are probably over now. Far as I know, none of the ranches are hiring. Maybe if you go further south, down into New Mexico territory where the winter wasn't so bad, you'll have some luck.
What are you trying to do, mister? Put a shoe on a split hoof?
Smoke Jensen should have known better than to fall for an old trick like that. But out of concern for the horse, he looked at Stormy's hoof. That was when one of the other riders stepped up and slammed the butt of his pistol down on Smoke's head. Oh. Oh. Opening his eyes, Smoke discovered that he was lying face down in the dirt. He had no idea where he was or why he was lying on the ground, though he sensed that there were several people standing around looking down at him. His head throbbed, and his brain seemed unable to work. Who were these people, and why were they here? For that matter, why was he here? Smoke tried to get up, but everything started spinning so badly that he nearly passed out again. He was conscious of a terrible pain on the top of his head, and when he reached up and touched the spot gingerly, his fingers came away sticky with blood. Holding his fingers in front of his eyes, he stared at him in surprise. That was when he saw a shirt sleeve. He wasn't wearing the blue shirt he had started out with that morning. Instead, he was wearing a red and black plaid shirt, one of the shirts he had seen on the men who had accosted him.
What happened?
I tell you what happened, mister. Looks to me like there's a falling out among thieves. The other boys turned on you, didn't they? They knocked you out, took the money for themselves.
Smoke got up slowly, trying to make sense of things. He wasn't sure what the man was suggesting, so he just hesitated.
That's right, ain't it?
The man talking to him was a very big man, wearing a tan buckskin vest over a red shirt. Peeking out from just behind the vest was a lawman's star.
I'm not sure if I know what you're talking about, Sheriff.
I'm not a sheriff. I'm marshal for the town of Etna. And lying ain't gonna do you no good. Too many people seen you in that shirt you're wearing. And just because you wound up without any of the money, it don't make you no less guilty. You're gonna hang, mister. I don't know which one of you killed Mr. Clark back there in Etna when you held up the bank, but it don't really matter none who pulled the trigger. Every one of you sons of bitches is just as guilty.
Smoke had been right in sensing that there were several people around him, because as he looked around now, he could see several more men glaring at him, all of whom were brandishing weapons, ranging from revolvers to rifles to shotguns. Again, Smoke put his hand to the wound on his head. It was extremely painful to the touch.
Oh, who are you?
I'll be asking the questions, mister. But for your information, the name is Turnbull.
Turnbull pointed to a thin-faced, hawk-nosed man who appeared to be in his mid-20s. He was also wearing a star.
This here's Pike, my deputy. And the rest of these men are temporarily deputized for posse duty. What's your name?
Jensen. Kirby Jensen. Though most folks call me Smoke.
Smoke Jensen, eh?
Yeah, you heard of me?
Oh, yeah. I heard of you, all right. Fact is, I got paper on you tacked up on my wall.
Paper?
You're a wanted man, Mr. Jensen.
No, if you've got wanted posters on me, they're old. Very old. All the Dodgers on me have been withdrawn. I'm not wanted.
Well, if you wasn't wanted before, you're sure wanted now, seeing as how you robbed our bank. I reckon you and your friends figured you could get away with it, because Etna's so small. But you got yourself another thing coming.
What? I didn't rob any bank.
Anyone who would wear a plaid shirt while robbing a bank is just too damn dumb to be an outlaw. Hell, half the town of Etna described you.
They may have described the shirt, Marshal, but they didn't describe me.
Same thing.
No, it isn't the same thing. This isn't my shirt.
Oh, you mean you stole the shirt before you stole the money from the bank?
No, I mean whoever attacked me took my shirt and put this one on me.
Now, if that ain't about the dumbest damn thing I ever heard, why would anyone do that?
It's obvious, isn't it? They did it to throw the suspicion on me. I guess they figured the law around here would be dumb as dirt and buy into it. Looks like they were right.
You say I'm dumb, but you're the one who got caught. Quit lying and save your breath. I know what happened. You boys got into a little fight, and they let out on you. I'm arresting you for the murder and bank robbing you and the others done in my town.
Deputy Pike and one of the other riders grabbed Smoke roughly and tried to twist his arms behind his back.
I'll do it. I'm just looking for an excuse to shoot you, you murdering bastard.
Pike! I told you we're taking him back alive. You kill him here, we'll never find the others.
If you want to shackle me, just ask. No need for you to pull my arms out of the sockets.
Put your hands behind your back.
Shackle his hands in front of him. He's got to ride his horse back into town.
Smoke held his hands out in front, and Pike shackled them together.
Help him on his horse, and pick up them empty bank wrappers. Like as not, we'll be needing him as evidence.
Marshal Turnbull, my horse picked up a stone. I was working on his foot when the bank robbers jumped me. He'll go lame if he isn't taken care of.
No, check it out, Frakes.
Frakes had been staring unblinkingly at Smoke from the very beginning. He made no effort to move.
What?
He said his horse picked up a stone. Check it out.
Left foreleg.
Frakes lifted the horse's left foreleg.
Yeah, there's a stone here, all right.
Frakes took a knife from his pocket and, after a moment, got the stone out.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Pike held the reins as Smoke got mounted.
You're making a big mistake. I did not hold up any bank. I was on my way to Denver to meet with a land broker. I own Sugarloaf Ranch down in Rio Grande County. I haven't even been to Etna before today.
You want to explain these empty bank wrappers here?
Turnbull held one of them out for Smoke to examine. Printed on the side of the wrapper was $1,000, Bank of Etna.
They must have been left here by the men who jumped me. They're the ones you're looking for.
Jumped you, you say?
Yes, I told you. I was seeing to my horse when they rode up. They started talking to me, and the next thing I knew, they knocked me out. That must have been when they took my shirt off and left this one. That's also when they left these bank wrappers laying around. They set me up.
You got any witnesses to that?
Well, no. The only witnesses are the ones who did it. And they certainly wouldn't testify against themselves.
Too bad you ain't got no witnesses, mister. Because I do have a witness. At least a half a dozen of them. And they'll every one of them swear they seen you and the other robbers riding out of town.
Your witnesses are wrong, Marshal. They are either mistaken or they're lying.
Mister, I am one of them witnesses. Then I don't cotton to being called a liar. So don't you go telling me what I did and what I did not see. I remember them plaid shirts you and one of the other robbers was wearing, like as if there was a picture of them drawn on my eyeballs.
I told you this isn't my shirt. You're making a huge mistake.
No, friend. The only mistakes being made around here was by you. And you made three of them. Your first mistake was picking a bank in my town to rob. Your second was having a fallout with the other thieves. And your third was getting yourself caught. Now let's go.
The ride back to town took about 2 hours. Turnbull had Smoke put into one of the holding cells of his office. The men of the posse gathered there as well, all staring at Smoke with evil intent in their eyes.
Yeah, I'm gonna hold him until Judge Craig can get down here and hold a trial.
Marsh, you know damn well the judge's gonna find him guilty, then we'll hang him anyway.
And then you can afford to be a little patient.
Deal with patience. I say let's do it now and get it over with.
Turnbull pointed his shotgun at Fremont.
You aren't listening to me, are you?
Whoa, hold on there. What are you doing, Turnbull? You shooting an innocent man to save a murderer?
There's nothing innocent about a lynching, or about anyone who would suggest one. Now, I appreciate your help in this matter, but I think your time here has come to an end. Why don't you all just mosey out of my office?
Yes, sir.
Pike, why don't you go with him and make sure the town keeps peace?
Yes, Marshal.
The men of the posse quickly left the room. Frakes remained behind.
You may as well go on too, Frakes.
You think the town would really lynch Jansen?
Doesn't matter. I don't intend to let it happen. I can't say as I blame him, though. Mr. Clark was a good man, and he carried a lot of people through the winter, giving them time on their loans and all.
What if we don't have the right man?
What do you mean, what if we don't have the right man? Hell, you saw the shirt just as plain as everyone else in town.
Well, yes, sir, I did.
Then what makes you think we ain't got the right man?
I remember the shirt, but I don't know as I remember the face.
Yeah, well, don't worry about it. We got the right man, all right. Soon as he gets his day in court, why, we'll prove he is the right one. And then we'll build a gallows right here on Front Street. And all these people that's got a bloodlust out will have their hanging. Only by then, it'll be legal.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you're right.
Later in the day, Pike returned and was leafing through all the wanted posters.
Aha! You was right!
Pike suddenly held up one of the posters.
We do have some papers on a fella named Smoke Jensen. Hey, Marshall, do you know there's a $5,000 reward on him?
No, I just remember having seen a name on a Dodger, that's all.
$5,000? Damn, that's a lot of money. Just think what we could do with that money.
It don't do us any good to think about it.
What do you mean it don't do us any good to think about it? We're the ones that caught him. I'd like to know who has a better claim on it.
It ain't a point of having a better claim on it. We're the law. If you're the law, you can't collect a reward. It's just the way of it.
Well, that ain't right. That ain't no way right.
Marshall, check the date on that poster.
Turnbull looked at the poster, front and back.
There ain't no date.
Well, take a good look at the poster then. Can't you see how the paper has already turned color? That alone should tell you how old it is.
It don't matter how old it is. I never received anything canceling it.
All right. It tells what county issued it, doesn't it? Doesn't it say it came from Hinsdale County?
Hinsdale County, yeah.
Then it's easy enough for you to check.
Check how?
All you have to do is send a telegram to the sheriff of Hinsdale County and ask if the poster is still good.
I could do that, I suppose, but what difference would it make?
What do you mean, what difference would it make? It'll prove that I'm not a wanted man.
Oh, it might prove that you aren't wanted for this crime anymore, whatever the crime was. But that don't have anything to do with why you're in jail now. You were in jail because you robbed a bank and killed a good man. And near half the town seen you do it. That's something you can't get out of.
I didn't do it.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll just have to let a judge and jury decide that, won't we?
Dooley, the Logan brothers, Fargo, Ford, and Buford Yancey had watched from an elevated position near the place where they had encountered Smoke. They saw the posse arrive, confront Smoke, then ride away with him as their captive.
That was smart leaving them empty bank wrappers like that. They think he'd done it.
Yeah, but this is what gets me. They gotta know that there was more than one person. How come they're all going back with him? Why ain't they still searching for the rest of us?
Well, come on, Fargo. You know how posses is. When they first get started, why, they're full of piss and vinegar, ready to chase a body to hell and back. They run out of steam just real quick. Especially if they find just enough success to make them feel good about themselves. And what we done was give them something to make them think they done good.
Let's go.
Dooley led him up into the high country and through a pass that was still packed with snow.
Damn, Dooley. Couldn't you find a place that's easier to get through? Snow here is ass deep to a tall Indian.
Nobody who's looking for us will expect us to come this way. And if they do come this way, it'll be just as hard for them as it is for us.
Well, you'll see them. They ain't even coming after us at all. I sure don't see no need to be working so hard just to get away from a posse that ain't even chasing us.
If you don't like following me, just go your own way.
Well, hell, we ain't got no choice now but to keep on going this way. Now it'd be as hard to go back as it is to keep going.
Besides which, we ain't divided up the money yet.
We'll divide it up as soon as we get through the pass, Yancey, and we can all go our separate ways.
Come on, Pearly, why won't you go with me?
I just don't care that much about traveling shows, that's all.
But they say the Eddie Four is really funny.
Now, you go on, Cal. Have a good time.
You sure you don't want to come? I mean, if I won't go if you don't want
to. Go! You aren't joined at the hip. You can do something by yourself if you want to.
All right, if you're sure.
Cal started down the street toward the music hall. A large banner that was spread across the front of the music hall read, Eddie Foy, dancer, humorous.
Cal?
Cal turned toward him.
If you hear any good jokes, tell me tonight, will you?
I will.
Pearly watched his young friend walk away, then he headed for the saloon. It wasn't that he didn't want Cal's company, or even that he didn't enjoy his company. It was just that he intended to play a little poker tonight, and he knew how Sally felt about such things. He didn't want to be blamed for getting Cal mixed up in a card game. There was another reason Pearly wanted to play cards tonight. On the few nights he had come in for a beer, which was all he could afford before his first payday working in the livery stable, he had noticed that the Oasis Saloon employed a woman as dealer for the card game. The woman's name was Annie, and through the week, Pearly and Annie had flirted with each other. She had invited him into the game several times, and Pearly sometimes got the idea that the invitation might be for more than just a game of cards. He had turned her down every time, not because he wanted to, but because he couldn't afford to. Tonight, he felt like he could. So he nursed a beer at the bar, and then went straight to the table the moment a seat opened up.
My, my, look who's finally come around.
I thought I might give it a try.
New player, new deck.
Annie picked up a box, broke the seal, then dumped the cards onto the table. They were clean, stiff, and shiny. She pulled out the joker, then began shuffling the deck. Her hands moved swiftly, folding the cards in and out, until the law of random numbers became king. She shoved the deck across the table.
Cut.
Pearly cut the deck, then pushed the cards back. He tried to focus on her hands, though it was difficult to do so because she kept finding ways to position herself to draw his eyes toward her more interesting parts.
You aren't having trouble concentrating, are you?
Depends on what I'm concentrating on.
You naughty boy.
Yeah, what's going on here? You two know each other?
Not yet, but I have a feeling we're going to. Five card. Stud.
Oh, fine.
The cards started falling for Pearly from the moment he sat down. He won $15 on the first hand, and a couple of hands later, he was ahead by a little over $30. In less than an hour, he had already tripled the money he'd started with. Most of the other players were taking Pearly's good luck in stride. But the one who had asked if Annie and Pearly knew each other, a man named Creed Love, began complaining.
Something kind of fishy's going on here.
Fishy, Mr. Creed Love.
Creed Love looked at Annie, then nodded toward Pearly.
I think you and him's working together.
And just how would we be working together?
You think I believe that him winning all the time is just dumb luck?
It's not luck, it's skill. And the only dumb person in this card game is you. You need to calculate the odds so as to know when to bet and when to fold. That's something you haven't figured out.
Huh. You think you have me pegged, do you? Suppose me and you have a go at it. Just the two of us.
Don't ask me. Ask the others if they'd be willing to sit it out.
$25 to sit in.
The other players all shook their heads and pushed away from the table.
How about you?
All right. I'll play. Name your game.
Five card stud.
I'm in.
Creed Love reached for the cards, but Pearly stuck his hand out to stop him.
No, you don't think I'm gonna let you deal, do you? We'll let the lady deal.
Uh-uh.
Creed Love nodded toward one of the other players.
We'll let Pete deal.
How do I know that you and Pete aren't in cahoots? Suppose we get someone who isn't at this table right now.
Oh, I do.
Pearly looked around the saloon and saw that there were at least four bar girls working the tables.
How about one of the ladies? You can choose.
All right. You, honey, come here.
The girl looked up in surprise at being summoned in such a way.
It's all right, Sue. It'll just take a minute.
We want you to deal a hand of cards.
She gets $10 from the pot.
What? Why should she get $10?
If she gets $10 from the pot, it won't make any difference to her who wins. It will guarantee you that it's a fair game.
That's fine by me. How about you?
All right.
Sue dealt a down card to each, then an up card. Creed Love showed a king. Pearly, a five of hearts.
Not looking that good for you, is it? Bet $5.
Pearly matched the bet. The next card gave Creed Love a pair of kings showing.
Bet $10.
Pearly called the bet. And Creed Love's next card was a jack. Pearly drew another six, giving him a pair of sixes. Creed Love bet another $10, and Pearly called. Creed Love's final card was another jack. Pearly drew another six.
Well now, I have two pair, kings and jacks, and you have three of a kind. So the big question is, do I have a jack or a king is my whole card? Or do your three little sixes have my two pair beat? It's going to cost you 20 to find out.
I'll call and raise you another 20.
You're putting quite a store in them three sixes, aren't you? How do you know I don't have a full house?
I'm betting you have two pair. and I have you beat.
Creedlove hesitated for a second. Then with a big smile, he pushed $20 into the center of the table.
All right. I've got you right where I want you. All right, Cole.
Creedlove smiled and flipped over his down card to disclose a king.
Well, looky here. Full house. Kings over jacks. Looks like you lost this one, friend. Full house beats 3 sixes.
Creedlove reached for the pot as Pearly turned up his down card, showing another 6.
Yep, but it won't beat 4 sixes.
What? No, that's not possible.
Of course it's possible. There are 4 of everything in a deck. Or hadn't you ever noticed that?
By now, everyone in the saloon was aware of the high-stakes game, and they had all gathered around to watch. Creedlove slid the rest of his money to the center of the table.
I've got $36 here. What do you say we cut for high card?
Pearly covered his bet, then Sue fanned the cards out.
I'll draw first.
Creedlove drew a queen.
Ha-ha!
Pearly drew a king.
What the fuck? You cheated me, you son of a bitch! No one's this lucky!
How did I cheat? You had the same chance I did.
I don't know how you cheated. I just know somehow you cheated.
Pearly stood up then and stepped back from the table.
Now, mister, you might want to think about that for a moment. You can always get more money, but you can't get another life.
No. I ain't gonna draw against you. But I ain't taking back my words either. You are a card cheat.
Now both you gents just hold it right there.
Pearly saw the bartender pointing his shotgun toward him.
Calling someone a cheat is the kind of thing that can get a man killed if he can't back it up. Annie, Sue, you've been watching this. Was there any cheating going on?
Not a bit of it, Carl. The game was above board in every respect.
All right. And that leaves you at fault, Creedlove. So I reckon you better get on out of here.
You got no right to run me out of here.
This here scattergun gives me the right. Now you can either walk out, or your bloody carcass will be pulled out. Which is it gonna be?
Creedlove glared at the bartender for a moment. Then he glared at Pearly.
All right. This ain't the end of it. Me and you will run into each other again sometime.
I can hardly wait.
Don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out.
Marshal.
What do you want, Jensen?
I appreciate you standing up to the posse like that.
Maybe you don't realize this, Jensen, but folks around here had a hard winter. I certainly sympathize with them.
We all had a hard winter.
Yeah, well, a lot of the folks hereabouts wouldn't have their homes or businesses if not for Mr. Clark. You picked the wrong man to kill.
I didn't kill him.
And you expect me to believe that?
Marshal, send a telegram to Sheriff Carson back in Big Rock. He can tell you who I am.
Well, I might just do that.
Turnbull walked away from the cell and saw Deputy Pike standing at the front window.
What are you looking at?
Them fellas from the posse you run away is all standing out there in front of the Bull's Head.
I don't have any problem with them as long as they're standing down there talking and not up here making trouble.
That wasn't right. You running them off like that. Every one of them's our friend. I can't believe you would have shot Mr. Fremont over something like this.
I didn't shoot him, did I?
Would you have shot him?
I didn't shoot him, did I?
And then he said, I walked into this church.
This?
This. But that's how he talked. He'd say words like Mississippi instead of Mississippi. It was real funny the way he talked.
All right, go on with the joke.
It was the morning after, and Cal and Pearly were in their boarding house, getting ready to go to work at the livery.
All right, so, Eddie Forrest says, this cowboy went into this church and took a fit on a long bench next to a pretty woman. And then Eddie Forrest asked everybody in the audience, what do you call a long bench that people fit on in church? And everybody in the audience yells back at him, pew. So then, Eddie Forrest says, he said, no, that's what a pretty woman said when the cowboy sat down beside her. Pew.
So the pretty woman told him what the bench was called?
No. Don't you get the joke? She said, pew, because the cowboy was stinking up the place.
Oh, yeah. That is funny.
He was really funny. He told a lot of funny stories. I can remember most of them, but they aren't as funny when I tell them.
Well, that's because Eddie Ford does that for a living, and he's good at it. You're a cowboy who... No, we're cowboys who muck out horse manure for a living.
Yeah, I reckon that's so.
Cal, how would you like to go back?
Go back? Go back where?
To Sugarloaf.
I thought we wasn't to go back there as long as we were a burden on Smoke and Miss Sally.
Miss Sally would correct you and say weren't.
Well, but didn't you say we weren't going back to be a burden on Smoke and Miss Sally?
Well, that's what I said, all right. But if we go back now, we won't be a burden.
How do you figure that?
I played some cards last night, and I won some money.
How much did you win?
$217.
$200?
$217.
That's a lot of money.
Sure is. It's enough to go back and help out.
When do we leave?
Today.
Creedlove sat nursing his drink in the back of the saloon in the little town of Soledad. He had left Flora Vista shortly after his run-in with Pearlie at the card game in the Oasis Saloon. He had lost so much money in the card game that he barely had enough money to get by. And he wouldn't have any if he hadn't stolen $12 from a stage way station. That was 3 days and 50 miles ago, and he didn't figure he would ever see Pearlie again. But when he looked up as two men came in, there he was, Pearlie, and another cowboy who was even younger. Because Creedlove was sitting alone at the table in the back of the saloon, he was blocked from Pearlie's direct view by the cast iron stove, which, though cold now, still smelled of its heavy winter use. Creedlove watched as Pearlie said a few words to the bartender. Then Pearlie and his friend took their beers to a nearby table. Creedlove got up from the table, pulled his gun from his holster, then holding it down by his side so it wouldn't be obvious that he had already drawn his weapon. He stepped around the stove and started across the floor. Pearlie was just pulling the chair out from the table when out of the corner of his eye, he saw Creedlove moving toward him.
Draw your gun, you son of a bitch, or I aim to shoot you dead.
Pearlie already has his gun out.
Pearlie didn't need Cal's warning, because even as Creedlove was bringing his pistol to bear, Pearlie drew his own pistol. Carrying the wanted poster on Smoke Jensen, Marshal Turnbull walked down toward the telegraph office.
Hey, Marshal, good job catching that murderer and bank robber.
Rodney Wheat, wearing a green visor and red suspenders, was sitting behind the counter reading a Penny Dreadful novel.
Thank you.
Too bad he didn't have any of the money with him.
Yeah, it is. But at least we have him.
Turnbull showed Wheat the wanted poster.
It was this fella.
Wheat looked at the poster.
Proclamation $5,000 reward for the apprehension, dead or alive, of the murderer Kirby Smoke Jensen. This notice takes the place of all previous reward notices. Sheriff Hinsdale County, Colorado, immediately.
I want you to send a telegram to the sheriff out in Hinsdale County telling him we have his fella in custody.
I can't do that.
What do you mean you can't do that? Why can't you do it?
Telegraph line is down. It's been down for a couple days now.
Well, when do you think you get it back?
There's no way of telling. Last time it took 2 weeks.
2 weeks?
2 weeks. It might even take longer this time. If the line is out up in the higher elevations, there will still be so much snow that the line crew might not be able to get to it.
Turnbull stroked his jaw as he contemplated the situation.
Oh. All right. I'll send a letter. What's the county seat of Hinsdale County?
Lake City? But I don't know if you're going to have any more luck with the letter than you are with sending a telegram. That's on the other side of the mountains. I'm not sure none of the high passes are open yet.
Maybe not, but I'm going to try.
Smoke was lying on the bunk in his cell with his hands laced behind his head, staring up at the ceiling. He had to admit that the cell was solidly built. The bars didn't go all the way up to the ceiling, but came up only about 6 feet. Between the top of the bars and the ceiling itself was a 2-foot wall of solid brick.
Marshal.
What do you want, Jensen?
Did you send a telegram to Sheriff Carson back in Big Rock?
No.
What about the sheriff of Hinsdale County? Did you contact him about whether or not the poster was current?
I told you, it don't matter whether or not the poster is current. I'm only interested in the man you killed here, and the bank that you robbed here.
I didn't do it. I told you, contact Sheriff Carson. He'll vouch for me.
I'll send him a letter.
A letter?
The telegraph wire's down. Fact is, if Judge Craig wasn't scheduled to come into town tomorrow, we wouldn't even be able to send for him. At least we can have us a fair trial.
Hold on there, Marshal. You aren't planning on holding a trial before you can check up on my story, are you?
We're holding your trial tomorrow. We don't get that many visits from a judge, and I don't intend to waste this one.
Well, what about a lawyer? Do I get a lawyer?
We got two lawyers in town. If it's the way they normally do it, they'll flip a coin to see who prosecutes and who defends. Seems to work out all right.
There was no courthouse in the town of Etna, so the trial was held in the school. At the top of the blackboard in the front of the room, the alphabet was displayed in both cursive and block letters, capital and lowercase. On the side panel of the blackboard were the work assignments for each of the six grades that attended the single-room schoolhouse. A stove sat in a sandbox in the corner of the room. An artwork of the children was pinned on the wall. Two tables had been placed in the front of the classroom. One table had two chairs. That was for Smoke and his lawyer. The other table was the prosecutor's table, and it had only one chair. The jury occupied the two first rows of desks in the classroom, while the citizens of the town squeezed into the remaining desks. Others were standing along the two side walls and the back wall. The judge's bench was the school teacher's desk, while Miss Garvey, the school teacher, was pressed into service as the court reporter. Smoke felt a sense of melancholy as he looked around the schoolroom. His Sally had been teaching at a school exactly like this one when he met her. It was a cruel irony that his fate was about to be decided in a place like this.
All rise!
Judge Arlie Craig was a short, fat man who definitely filled out his black robes. He was bald except for a tuft of white over each ear. He took a seat at the bench, then looked out over the courtroom.
The court may be seated.
As the people sat, Judge Craig removed his glasses and cleaned them thoroughly. Then he put them back on, hooking them very carefully over one ear at a time.
Bailiff, would you call the case, please?
Your Honor, there comes before this honorable court one Kirby Jansen. Mr. Jansen is charged with the murder of Robert J. Clark. Said murder committed during the act of robbery of the Bank Etna.
Was this charge issued by a grand jury?
It was, Your Honor. The grand jury met this morning.
Thank you. And is the accused now represented by counsel?
He is, Your Honor. I am Asa Jackson, duly accredited by the bar of the state of Colorado to practice law.
Is the defendant satisfied with counsel?
I am not, Your Honor.
Mr. Jensen, what complaint do you have against Mr. Jackson?
Your Honor, I have no complaint against Mr. Jackson personally, but I would prefer to select my own lawyer.
There are only two lawyers in town. Would you rather have the prosecutor act as your defense counsel?
No, Your Honor. I ask for a delay so that I may get a lawyer from my own hometown of Big Rock.
Mr. Hagen, you are the prosecutor. How say you to this request?
Your Honor, the crime is still fresh upon the minds of all the witnesses. I fear that any delay may cloud their memories, perhaps even to the detriment of the defendant. All that is required by law is that he be provided with counsel, and we have done so. I move that his request for delay be denied.
Due to my own busy schedule, it would be several weeks before I could return to Etna. And, as Mr. Hagen has pointed out, the closer the trial is held to the event, the sharper the memories of the witnesses who are called. Therefore, your request for a delay in the trial is denied. Has there been voir dire of the jury?
There has, Your Honor, and both defense and prosecution have accepted the jury as it is now constituted.
Very good. And now, Mr. Jensen, how do you plead to the charge against you?
Not guilty.
Very well. The defendant represented and the jury accepted, I declare this case in session. Mr. Hagen, make your case.
Lester Hagen was a tall, gangly-looking man with a wild shock of hair and prominent ears. Standing, he turned to face the jury, which was seated just behind him.
It won't take me long to do this. Practically everyone in this town was a witness to the robbery of the Bank of Etna on the sixth day of this very month. I could call any of them, and they all would give compelling and damning testimony. $10,000 was taken, money that belonged to the fair people of this town.
Turning back to the table, he picked up the red and black plaid shirt Smoke had been wearing when he was arrested.
Look at this shirt. It is not a shirt anyone can easily forget. And if you've seen this shirt on a man who is in the act of killing another, then the shirt becomes even more vividly burned into your memory. This shirt alone is enough to convict the defendant. No matter what he or his lawyer may say to obfuscate the issue, the facts are indisputable. A man wearing this very shirt killed Rob Koch. This man was captured wearing this very shirt. I think that when this trial is finished, you will have no difficulty in finding Mr. Kirby Jensen guilty as charged.
Hear, hear! There'll be no such demonstration in this courtroom.
The court grew quiet, then all turned their attention to Asa Jackson. Like Hagen before him, Jackson stood to address the jury. Considerably shorter than Hagen, and with eyes made almost bug-like by his thick glasses, Jackson made much less of an impression by his appearance.
The law states that before you can find someone guilty, you must be convinced beyond the shadow of a doubt that he is guilty. You will hear the witnesses say that there were three men shooting into the bank. Since three men were shooting, it's impossible to say that Kirby Jensen was the one who actually murdered Mr. Clark.
Jackson sat back down and Smoke leaned over toward him.
The way you presented that, it made it sound as if I was there.
It's gonna be hard to say you weren't there with the evidence that the prosecutor has. Our best hope is to sow doubt as to who actually did the shooting.
Prosecution, you may call your first witness.
Prosecution calls Mr. Tucker Patterson.
Tucker Patterson walked to the front of the room and put his hand on the Bible.
You swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
The witness may be seated.
For the record, Mr. Patterson, what is your employment?
I am the head teller of the Bank of Etna.
Mr. Patterson, were you in the bank on the 6th instant?
I was.
Tell the court what happened that day.
Mr. Clark and I were both behind the teller's cage, counting the money to make certain that the books were balanced, when the two men came in.
Can you describe the two men?
One of the men was wearing a shirt like that one.
Let the record show that the witness identified the prosecution exhibit as the shirt worn by one of the robbers.
Object, Your Honor. The witness said it was a shirt like that one. He didn't say he was wearing that one.
I stand corrected, Your Honor. Mr. Patterson, you said there were two men.
Yes, the other man was wearing a white shirt.
I object. He's describing the clothes, not the men.
Mr. Smoke, if your attorney cares to make that objection, he may do so. But as the defendant, you are not allowed to object.
Are you going to object?
I object. Mr. Jensen is correct. The witness is describing clothing and not the men themselves.
Sustained.
Mr. Patterson, could you see the men's faces?
No, they were covered by hoods.
So, by looking at the defendant, you cannot say, as a matter of fact, that he was not one of the robbers, can you?
I object. He just said that the men's faces were covered.
Listen to the question, Counselor. He asked if he could positively say that Jensen was not one of the robbers.
Oh.
Objection is overruled.
So, since you cannot positively say that he was not one of the robbers, it is possible that he was one of them.
Yes.
Hagen continued with Patterson, eliciting from him the details as to how Clark got a gun, then ran to the front door to challenge the bank robbers as they were leaving.
I told him not to go, that there were too many of them, but Mr. Clark was a brave man and he wouldn't hear of it. He ran to the front door and started to shoot, but got shot instead.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson. Your witness.
Jackson stood, but didn't approach the witness.
Did you see who actually did the shooting?
No, I was inside the bank. I saw Mr. Clark get shot, but from where I was, I couldn't see who shot him.
So, even though you saw Mr. Jensen wearing this shirt in your bank, once the robbers got outside, you have no idea who did the actual shooting?
I object.
You are objecting your own lawyer?
Yes, Your Honor. I ask the court's permission to act as my own lawyer.
Are you saying you wish to dismiss counsel?
Yes, Your Honor. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Court is going to stand in recess for half an hour. Marshal Turnbull, clear the courtroom of everyone except you and the defendant.
Yes, sir. All right, people, you heard the judge. Everyone out.
Your Honor, if there's going to be a sidebar, I request permission to remain.
Permission denied. You will leave with everyone else.
What about me? Since the defendant is my client, shouldn't I be present?
You heard the defendant, Mr. Jackson. You have just been dismissed.
It took less than a minute for everyone to leave. Then Turnbull, who'd been standing at the door watching them leave, came back to the front of the room.
They're all gone, Judge.
Mr. Jensen, there is a saying in the legal profession that a person who defends himself has a fool for a client. Do you know what I am saying to you?
Yes, sir. I believe I do.
Disabuse yourself of any idea that I will go easier on you because of your inexperience or lack of knowledge of the law. Regardless of your competence or incompetence, this case will be tried under the rules of law. Do you understand that?
Yes, sir. I do.
Very well. Mr. Jackson is dismissed, and I hereby declare you sui juris.
I beg your pardon.
Sui juris. It is a Latin term meaning that you have the capacity to act for yourself in legal proceedings. You are hereby acting as your own counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Marshal Turnbull, you may reassemble the court.